Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. It's Scott here. It's another beautiful day to be alive, beautiful day to take a breath, and a beautiful day to listen to this podcast. I'm very excited about this one, absolutely excited, but I want to get to the sponsors real quick before we get this thing started. We're sponsored by a couple really awesome entrepreneurs and small businesses. One of them happens to be Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F. That is Wake Up, Live Free, up-and-coming clothing and apparel company, and really making some nice stuff that you should definitely go check out. They just launched their website at www.wolfnation.rocks, R-O-C-K-S. They're taking all sorts of pre-orders on clothing for men, women, children. Right now, they just added a few more items. They now have leggings for females with the varsity lettering, sports tank tops for ladies, camouflage hats and shirts, Rolls Royce edition, Coca-Cola editions. A lot of new stuff coming up weekly. They're really trying to get off the map. So that is Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you're not pursuing it. Now, we are lucky enough to be sponsored by an awesome craft brewery located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, and that is Manskirt Brewing. Okay, Manskirt Brewing is just a very cool place to go, have a couple pints, listen to some music, chill out. There's always 8 seasonally inspired ales rotating constantly, so there's always something new going on at Manskirt. They got the Battleship New Jersey Festival in Camden tomorrow, okay, so Saturday. They also added some hours Friday and Saturdays. They're now open till 10, Sundays to 6, so plenty of time to go check out the guys at Manskirt. Go say hi to Joe in his Manskirt. So go check him out on Instagram and Facebook. Again, best way to go is go have a delicious hoppy pint. Manskirt Brewing. Now, finally, we are presented by Trivia Revolution, which is fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution takes place in all different beer bars and breweries all throughout the state of New Jersey. You can be in last place and still win prizes. It's just a good night out. So go on, check out Trivia Revolution, see where they're at, and give it a try. Go on out and play a game. Bring some friends. Bring your smart friends, definitely. But again, that is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Okay, I am really excited about this episode. We are joined by one of my favorite comics, Pete Corielli. Pete is the co-host of the Pete and Sebastian Show, Pete and Sebastian Maniscalco. A great comic. He just had a Showtime special. He'll be playing in the Borgata coming up soon. And we just got to talk to Pete, you know, about his career, about writing for Kevin James, just a lot of really interesting stuff. So really excited to bring you Pete Corielli. And then we are also joined by two members of an upcoming band named Happy. So just a really cool episode. Go check out the Pete and Sebastian Show when you're done with this. So enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is comedian Pete Corielli from the Pete and Sebastian podcast show. It's really a show. And right now, you are listening to Verbal Shenanigans with Scott and Mike somewhere down in fucking Georgia, sounding like he's skinning raccoons as we speak. And Scotty keeping it classy in Jersey, baby. Keeping it classy.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Okay. Welcome back. Welcome back to your favorite weekly story time, your favorite weekly unveiling of fun, and
are we doing a different show?
Oh. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah.
It's me again.
The intros are really hard, man. Maybe you should do the intros from now on.
All right, that sounds like a plan.
All right, here we go.
Can't wait till next week.
Here we go.
No, you're
on the spot. I'm always on the spot. Here we go. And go.
Sup.
Sup, peeps. Sup, peeps. Sup, peeps. It's your boy, Mike.
The Pearl's coming to you live on the shenanigans, y'all.
Immediately, everyone would turn. Like, everyone just turned it off. Like, shit, we clicked on it. We did not mean to click on it. but anyway, guys, welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, a show that tries to interview passionate people and just overall kind of have a good time. We had a fun episode last week. We interviewed someone from Hunt a Killer. Mike, did you? How many people emailed you saying we found you? We saw the clue. We had to listen to the Verbal Shenanigans episode, and the clue was that he's one of the hosts. How many people emailed you during the week?
My usual amount of zero, unfortunately. So.
All right. And then we also had Doyle McPoyle, Bob Rush from Sunny in Philadelphia and Sons of Anarchy. So it was a good episode. But, guys, I am Scott Brennan, and there is my cohort, Mike Berlew, down in sweet Georgia.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It'll be sweeter next week when I'm in the house.
Yes, that's right. You've become a Georgian homeowner.
Yeah, that's correct.
So you're going through the lovely process of closing on a house, which is very fun.
Yeah, they have changed the date 6 times on me. It got to the point where I had to literally tell them, all right, if we're doing it on this date, I'm going to need it in paperwork just so if you try to back out,
yeah,
you know, we got some kind of lawyer stuff in there. Now, interesting little fun thing got thrown into the house
hot tub?
Just last week. You're in the ballpark.
Sauna?
What's that?
Sauna? Pool?
No, you were, what was your first answer? Possum?
Hot tub.
I thought you said possum. And oddly, it's closer to the correct answer than hot tub.
the way you said it was like something got thrown into the house. I'm like, oh, they included a hot tub or something like that. But now you're saying they included a possum.
No, we are going to be owners of a tailless cat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like a cat that just sits there and has been living there forever?
It's
with no tail?
Well, it's a kitten. It's about, I think about 6 or 7 months old. Basically, the premise is the reason why my date changed about 8 different times is that gentleman's new house fell through, so he has to go rent somewhere, and the renters decided to say, okay, if you bring in a cat, that's for a 6-month rental, he wanted to charge him $700 for the cat. They didn't know where to turn, so they're like, hey, you kind of joked around you wanted the cat, so I'm gonna have a cat.
Okay.
And we're gonna name it Stubby because it has no tail.
Wow, really? That's really pointing out its weaknesses and naming him after that.
He's not a liberal cat. I mean, we're down in Georgia. He could take it.
He could take a joke. He's not offended.
Yeah.
So if he couldn't hear, if he didn't have ears, you'd call him like what the cat? You know, if he didn't have teeth, you'd call him gummy. You know.
Yeah. Why not?
If he had 3 legs, you'd call him Eileen.
Peg leg.
Yeah. Well, okay. Tripod, I'm glad that you inherited a cat, Berlew.
Yep. It will be an interesting little thing how Callie will react to this new addition, but
I was going to say, knowing your dog, it might be not a new addition after a day or so. It might, you know, you might be back to just a dog.
The cat does have some claws on it, so
cats are
vicious. She might want to be careful if that occurs, that matchup. So.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, good for you. So when do you officially close now?
Friday.
All right. Well, like I said, all this is a pain in the butt, but it's all just, like, in the end, you're just like, it's a couple weeks when it comes down to it. It is a pain, but, like, in the long run, you'll just look back and be like, you know, it was a hassle. But when you're in it. So listen, I closed on a house. That was a pain in the butt. I remortgaged. That was a pain in the butt. I got a divorce. That was really the 10,000.
That was crystal clear fun stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
we joke about it all the time.
That was like a day at the park, you know. But you know, it's always like we need this paper. We need this. We need this. You got to fill out this. You didn't sign that. Whatever it is, it's just.
Mm-hmm.
And half the time, I think it's like lawyers just like, okay, we need another hour of work. So thank you for the $250. But.
Yeah, it's lawyers. It's when the housing market fell, so they all crap their pants. It's like, oh, what's going on here? I mean, there was one point where they asked for the deposit, and I didn't have any checks. So Izzy was like, I'll just sign out the check. I mean, we're together and everything. And then I just had to go through a whole process today where I had to fill out a piece of paper saying, yes, that was a gift for the amount of the deposit. And I literally had to say, I promise I have money, even though you've been looking at it the entire time.
Yeah. What are you going to do? At least you're on your way, man. On your way.
Yeah. I can't wait. Yeah, get some visitors down. Maybe rent out a room for the Super Bowl. Maybe in 2026, rent out a room for the World Cup, you know?
Maybe rent out a room to one of the Super Bowl contestants. Super Bowl, what do you call them?
Deion Sanders, you get out of my house.
Deion Sanders, you were in the Super Bowl years ago. Stop it.
Yeah. Yes, I saw you with that video. Yes, you're too legit to quit. Now, please leave the household, okay?
Yeah. Well, we got a good show for you guys today. Mike, why don't we get to our first guest?
Okay.
So I've been very excited about this all week. Big influence on me, especially in the last 5 years or so. He has a podcast with probably the hottest comedian in the entire world, Sebastian Maniscalco.
Easily.
The hottest comic in the entire planet. But one of the funniest guys I ever met. Used to work with Brewer. Does comedy, has been doing comedy for a long time at this point. And just, I tune into their podcast weekly because it's just an entertaining show. It has influenced our show. I learned to do some things where we, you know, like where we hang and it's a good time talking about life and whatnot. Just a very influential guy. Wrote for Kevin Can Wait. He's done a million things along the way. One of my favorite comics, Pete Corielli.
Awesome.
So I'm very excited to talk to him. So with that, guys, let's give Pete Corielli a call.
Hello.
Petey.
What's up? Is this Mike?
This is Scott. This is, and then you should be able to hear Mike too. Mike, you hear Pete?
Oh, okay.
Mike, you there?
Yeah, I can hear.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, guys.
Pete, I feel like it's impossible for me to not say Petey like Jimmy from Boston. It's like ingrained in my head.
No, I hear you, man. People even texted and emailed it now. Petey!
Pete, first off, I want to thank you for giving me and Mike some time here. I've known of your work for a long time. I go back to Brewer's show. Brewer was always my favorite comic, and I remember you doing a lot of different things on that. So I go back with you a long time, and then I, you know, came around to Pete and Sebastian and also fell in love with your comedy over the years. So first off, thanks for giving us a few minutes here, man.
No, man, my pleasure. What are you kidding me? And thanks for the compliments. You go back to the regulator.
I wanted to start there. You know, you have a career now for a very long time in comedy and writing. When did you hook up with Brewer, like in Long Island through the comedy scene, or did you guys meet for the radio, or did you know each other before that?
No, we were really good friends before that, but we met in New York City. I was doing comedy, I'd say, for about 3-4 months. But, like, ever since I started doing stand-up comedy, it was just all I cared about, except my wife, obviously. But, like, so even though I was only about 3 months in, I was out every night, checking the clubs out, doing the open mics, getting on anywhere I can. And I'll never forget, Brewer came into the comic strip. And it was all new to me, man. I mean, I just knew the great ones like the Dangerfields and the Sam Kinisons and shit, but I didn't know the scene.
Right.
And he came in, and he didn't even have a spot. He was already doing it a long time, and he was kind of well-known in the city clubs. So he was just bopping in with his wife. He had just gone to Great Adventure, and he wanted to go up there and talk about it on stage.
That bit.
And it was like he was just riffing, and like the guy had total command, and he was crushing, and I was like, holy shit. So I left there, and then I was just looking him up online, and I'd see him on Comedy Central. And then I'd say, like, maybe about 3-4 months after that, I was at the Boston Comedy Club, which was a club downtown right by the Comedy Cellar. And I just did a spot, and I came off, and this guy comes up to me and goes, hey, man, And I go, I know you are. You're Jim Gruen, dude. What's up? And he's like, I like your jokes, man. See, where are you from? And I said, Long Island. He goes, oh, I thought that. I could tell. And then he's like, you want to get a beer? And we went downstairs and got a beer. And, like, now we're like brothers, man. I mean, I've known him forever. It's, like, super close. So then, like, you know, after he said, once you get a little better, I'll have you open for me. And then, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 months later, he had me open for him at a college. And I was like, I did a lot of gigs with him where I'd open for him when I wasn't on the road, and we became really close. And then, you know, and then he was doing Saturday Night Live, and work-wise, he was just way on a different level than I could ever be at the time.
Right.
So yeah. Then maybe like, I don't know, 5 or 6, 7, I don't know how many years later, we're just talking one day, and he's always like, dude, our conversations are so funny and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, hey, Sirius wants to know if we want to do, you want to do a radio thing with me where we just do it once a week, every Friday.
Yep.
We tape it whenever. And I said, all right. We literally did 2 of them. And then Sirius said, he calls me up and goes, hey, they want us to go every day, Monday through Thursday. And I was like, shit, all right. And then we did that for about 2 months. It was supposed to be a year. And after 2 months, they wanted a 3-year contract every day. So it was fun and I had a good time, but it wasn't my show. It was Jim's show. So. Yeah. There was always times when, you know, there were certain, you know, there were not always, but there were times when you're doing things where I'm like, yeah, I'd rather be doing something different. But there were times where I just thought it was so funny and I had so much fun, man. It was a great time.
I mean, you can hear
that's where I met DJ Lou, man. That's where I met DJ Lou. He's one of my best friends ever.
Really? Yeah, I was going to say, you could still hear you guys. The connection comes through immediately. Whatever it was, a couple weeks ago when you had... You had Brewer on when he was talking about the Billy Joel show. I mean, it was like radio gold instantly. Like, I could listen to you two guys banter for hours.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. We have fun. And then Sebastian came along and, you know, equally as fun, man. Equally as, actually, truth be told, probably more fun.
Right.
Because one, it's like, you know, I'm running it sort of like, you know, I mean, Sebastian has the same sensibility as me. So when I say I'm running it, we both want to do the same thing. You know, sometimes Jim wants to do, you know, get on rants about certain things and it is what it is. So,
right.
But this you know, but both are fun. Both are fun, man. So I don't know what to say with that.
Go ahead, Mike.
I mean, it's amazing talking about, I mean, read up on you. It talked about how. When you started, you were doing anything for time, talking about cooking burgers, mopping floors, and next thing you know, you got a serious show with Brewer, man. Did it get to your head immediately? Was it still just relaxing, like, this is part of the game and all, just lucked out? How you feel about that?
Well, no, because at that point, I was doing comedy full-time as a stand-up. I wasn't, you know, so it's... I've been doing comedy. I'd done Letterman a few times and The Tonight Show. So I was doing stuff. It was a good break. There's no doubt about it. But everything in my life, Mike, has been a fucking stand-up-wise slow grind. You know what I mean? When I look back, you know, compared to a lot of my friends, I've got a very, very successful comedy career. But then I got friends like Sebastian and Brewer that are like, you know, you know, especially Sebastian now.
Jesus.
I mean, he's the biggest thing out there. So anyway, you know, it's just like when you're in it, you're just in it. You know what I mean? You're always looking for the next thing, the next project. And it's like when we were doing Sirius with Brewer, I wrote a script. I literally wrote a movie script because on Sirius XM, they have a channel that's for old radio shows.
Uh-huh.
Before there was TV, you know, they'd be like, Bill goes, I'm going upstairs. You know, like that. Like, I love that shit. So I said to DJ Lou, we're going to make a whole movie, radio movie. And we had this guy who did an impersonation of Casey Kasem that was fucking hilarious. And we're going to have him narrate it. And all the voices are going to be our comedian friends doing famous voices. And I can't tell you how many hours me and DJ Lou put into this thing. The movie was an hour and 35, 40 minutes of hilarity, man. And we aired it once. It got a mixed review. I still have the CDs. And to this day, it's still like pretty much my favorite project maybe that I've ever done. And I didn't get a dime for it. So you just, when you're a comic, you're just doing shit. You know what you like. You try to make this work and that work. And You know, so I wrote a script now that I'm happy about, but we'll see.
That's awesome. Like, let's talk about your actual writing style. You've been doing it for so long. Are you the guy that's like, you know, a pen to paper, write it all out, or are you a work it out on stage kind of guy?
I'd say I'm a mixture of both, but I'm mostly a pen to paper kind of a guy. And by that I mean like now I get a lot of my material from talking with Sebastian because, yep, you know, it's just two comics riffing and taking things and analyzing them. So, but like what I will do through the years is how it's always been for me. I'm hanging out, I say something funny, yep, and then I'll write it down or I'll put it in my recorder. But aside from that, I'm the kind of guy that would always go and sit someplace or sit in my house. Like just yesterday, I wrote like five pages with a pen. I mean, with a piece of, what do I use? I use a pencil, thick pencil, and a notepad here. And I wrote five pages about pit bulls. And hilarious to me. But I mean, it probably will never see the light of day. But maybe I'll be on stage and then I'll riff something about a pit bull based on that. So,
dude, I don't know. Like when you guys were talking about Pit Bull Island the other day, you had me rolling. So there's definitely something there.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I was writing all this shit in my notebook the other day where I'm like, you know, it's like even if a pit bull went missing, a regular dog goes missing, you post a poster saying, looking for my little white buddy, you know, Rovo, whatever. You got a pit bull missing, you're putting a poster saying, lock the door, don't put me in a windows. It has no name and it only responds to fucking gunfire.
Yeah. You feel like the picture's got the jail numbers underneath its face, too, you know? Like.
Yeah, right. I miss being closer to New York City to work out more often.
Yeah.
But I've also learned as I've gotten older and better to be able to, like, I go up in New York City with like nothing, you know, maybe pit bulls, all I'd have in my head.
Right.
And then maybe I talk it out and da da da. And it didn't matter. It was Tuesday night. I'm passed. I'm at the Comedy Cellar every night. She loves me. Boom. I'm working out.
Yep.
And she knows by the weekend it'll crush. But now that I'm not there every night, now the way I do it is I sit home and I cut all the fat. I go, well, they wouldn't like that. They wouldn't like that. They might like this, you know. And then you bring it headlining onto the stage in the middle of the show, just a little more worked out off stage. So it's just a different kind of way. But I do it all. You know, you got to, when you say something funny, you got to write it down. Here's the other thing, too, I'll say. Comics will go, oh, man, I've been writing all day. I come up with nothing. Then I'm on the subway coming here, and I come up with a great joke. It's like, oh, I bother writing. And I'm like, dude, because if you weren't writing all day, your brain wouldn't be thinking that way. It's
right.
Thinking that way. That's why you came up with that, you know?
Yeah, I'm
That's
always...
like when me and Sebastian do the cast. It's so fun because of the, you know, the other day we're doing the one about getting robbed. Would you put your face on the dirty floor? It's fucking funny. It's so funny to me. So anyway,
yeah, I'm always fascinated by it. Like, you know, like I'm only probably 5 years in or whatever. And even like in, you know, when you're
This is Scott.
Yeah,
sure. Except like he's barbecuing squirrel as we talk.
Well, he probably is. He is in Georgia. That's
his voice. I just got interviewed last week by Larry the Cable Guy, and I feel like I'm with his brother now.
Well, it's funny because he's Mike the IT guy. That's his thing, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's Pennsylvania.
No, but
it's a recurring thing I tell everybody. It's I live in the South now, but I lived 30 some odd years in Jersey, Pennsylvania. So I don't know how it happened.
Yeah. How long have you been down south?
3 months now.
Oh, boy. Well, when in Rome, huh? You are taking on the accent, guy. So what were you saying about Sam and Scott?
No, I was saying, you know, like I'm like five, I guess, like solid years in or whatever. But I'm always fascinated by the different writing styles. Like, you know, even at my level where nobody's like open mics and shows here and there and, you know, you got the guy who writes word for word and is like a, you know, book. Then you got the guy that you, like, I get amazed by. I see guys go on with nothing and they're just able to, you know, work out this amazing bit. So I'm even when, like, you know, guys at your level, I'm still fascinated to hear how people really put their act together. I always like to ask that.
Some of my best bits have come in every different way, you know, like some of my best bits have come just saying something to a buddy and then someone saying you got to write that down. And then other ones came from, you know, writing it down, like really sitting there and writing it down until you kind of had something. Other ones were riffed on stage. Some of my best ones. I have this whole bread bit that I love. I did it on a Showtime special. And that was me and my wife just smoking weed at night, just talking about bread. And yeah, like the other night, this is what I love about my wife. I've been with her since the first joke. And, like, you know, as far as the sense of humor goes, man, I feel like it's important to be like Brewer's wife has his sense of humor. So when Brewer does what he does around the house and stuff, she's dying, man. She loves it, you know? So, like, you know, if you're with someone that doesn't get what you do, it can kind of handcuff you as far as feeling creative.
Right.
And, like, the other night, for me, like, I'm laying in bed, and it's late at night, and we hear a car outside, and I go, Jesus, Midas size it. And then there's a pause. It's like 2 in the morning, and my wife goes, Midas size it, guy? How fucking old are you? Right? And now we're both up. So we're laying there, and I go to her. I swear to God, this is word for word. I'm putting in a sitcom. I go, do you think the Pope has a king bed? Because we're in a king bed. And she goes, no way. And I go, you think the Pope sleeps in a twin? And she goes, no, full. And that was it. And I go, yeah, that makes sense. Full. Not too indulgent, but not too fucking, you know, primitive.
Oh, good night, honey.
So, yeah, you never going to get a good joke. Rodney Dangerfield, Brian Regan was telling me some great Dangerfield stories because he met him about how he's very much like about the joke, write the joke down, learn the joke, then bring the joke in. And Regan was playing in Tampa and he's years ago when he was young and starting out. And Rodney Dangerfield came into the comedy club and he just wanted to do his jokes and he had his little index card and he went up there and he did his jokes for like 10 minutes. Boom, 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 ba boom, ba ba boom. And then he comes off and he just goes, hey, thanks for the use of the hall. Thanks for the use of the hall. And he was like, the hall? Fucking comedy club. This guy's calling it a hall. Thanks for the use of the hall.
Go ahead, Mike.
I mean, do you find it easier? I mean, doing the podcasting, radio, all that stuff with all the riffing, is it easier that the jokes come, or do you feel sometimes that just like joking around with others, you don't get like your stand up voice, for lack of a better term?
Well, no, that's why I love doing the podcast with Sebastian, is because we got such similar senses of humor. And his, I know, obviously, I say he cracks me up. I know he cracks up half the country.
Yep.
But he really cracks me up where a lot of comics don't. And, you know, there's a side of Brewer when I did it with him, a big side that, like, would make me howl. His stories and this and that. But then there was a silly side of Jim that, like, Bob Saget would come on. And Bob Saget can be really silly, too. And they would, like, be silly together. And I would literally call Brewer before Saget would come on. And I'd be like, dude, can I just fucking not even come in today? I can't even stand it. And he would laugh, and he's like, no, because I don't know how long Saget's going to stay. And then they would just do goofy shit for 2 hours, and I couldn't. It was so not funny to me. Me and Lou would look at each other through the glass like, is this over? So it really just depends that, you know. And the same thing when we were doing SiriusXM, me and Brewer, depending on the comic who would come in, you know. They're all great, but you have certain tastes. So certain guys would come in, and they make you laugh, and that makes you riff more because they have the same sense of humor. So with Sebastian, it's so funny. We've been doing it for like 5 or 6 years. I don't know how long now, but even on those nights where I'm like, fuck, man, I don't even want to do it right now. I'm tired. As soon as I plug in and he's like, Scott, you know, like we're laughing. We're already laughing. And it's just great, man. So it's easy because of that.
I mean,
that's why I think Sarah loves Robin so much. I think she just like, you know, he feels so funny around her, you know?
Connected. Mm. Yeah. I was going to say, like, I will give you like your podcast credit. Like you know, we've been doing this now, I don't know, Mike, what, 3.5 years or something like that. And, you know, the hang part of it, you guys definitely influenced me with that, where it's a little bit more low-key. And we always start the episode by just talking about our life and our week and the daily observations and silly little games. And, you know, you guys, you know, influenced me. It's nice to hear, like, you know, guys in the business doing the same thing. And a guy like Sebastian, you guys always come off as very, very humble still. And, like very, you know, things that I observe, you know, at the gas station. It's fun to hear that you guys are observing the same crap. Like the fake $100 bill the other day had me rolling. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's cool to hear, man. So I do.
No, I appreciate that. That's important. I think, you know, is like, you know, some of these comics, they just, they get so famous, and then they're in these kind of bubbles, and then like nobody can relate to them. So then they just kind of start talking about pop culture, which is kind of like boring. So
you're right.
You know,
you're right.
But like, listen, I wrote for Kevin James. Kevin James isn't going to be able to do a bit about what it's like to just, you know, walk into a deli or Dunkin' Donuts and sit down with a cup of coffee because he can't fucking
do
that.
Can't do it. Can't do it.
So, it, you know, so then he talks about, yeah, he talks about his family and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun, though, to talk about that stuff because you know everyone can relate.
So I guess that segues me right into a question I had for you. You just came off of writing for Kevin Can Wait, which unfortunately got canceled and whatnot. But, I mean, your stories of staying, you know, in that apartment and whatnot for weeks at a time, like away from your family. Let me ask you something. As you know, you've been in the business for so long and you're saying, you know, you take things as they come and you do things. What is that like for to go from stand-up mind to sitcom writing mind, and where you're working on it like a day job all of a sudden, and you're in Fredonia, which is not around the corner, you know? What is that like being away from your kid and your wife, and all of a sudden going into like kind of like a full-time job of being funny, like forcing the funny, you know?
Well, no, it's a great question. I mean, me and Sebastian and Lou had like. Well, me and Sebastian, mostly Lou, just sitting there waiting to start the show. But Lou has recordings on me and Sebastian that could bury us, man. Like, before the show. Mm-hmm. And, like, I would come on sometimes with those guys and I would just, you know, say it how it is. And then I'd be like, I can't talk about any of this on the air. But they would laugh. And that was the root of it. It's not so much my wife and kid because when I'm on the road, that's the same thing. Yeah. And I was pretty much going home every weekend. But really, that was hard. I'm not going to lie. But the hard part was I when you first get in there, I'm excited because I've had deals in the past for sitcoms. And then I've never written one per se, so they don't really trust me. So they get some schmuck to write it, and it's not as funny. So I was tired of that shit.
Right.
So they can't take it away from me now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know how to do it. And when I went in there, it was very exciting to learn and then to realize, holy shit, I knew it. I knew you fucking guys couldn't do this better than me. I knew, you know, like I knew how to do this.
Yeah.
So that part of it was exciting. But then the realization that, okay, you know, Kevin's got his like right hand guys and he was taking a ton of my shit, like way beyond like what's the norm for someone who's brand new as it is. And he would have me out on the floor for the live tapings to bring him jokes, which like me and another dude were the only one who would do. So there was big parts. But in the end of the day, you know, I can't tell some guy who's been writing since Barney Miller, oh, no, that's not right. Let's do it this way. Even though in my heart, I know, I think this way is funnier. It's like there's a seniority thing. And you know, you got to respect that. And I get it. And then on top of that, you know, I'll be talking to this other writer who, this guy Pete, his name is too, who ended up leaving, but we wrote the script together that I really love now. This guy is a great writer. And we would sit off to the side and we'd be joking and shit. And sometimes the main boss would be like, okay, guys, you need everyone to focus. And it's like, I've been doing stand up my entire adult life. No grown man fucking tells me to focus. That's not the world I live in, you know? And I'm not saying anyone who has a job and a boss is less man than me. I'm just saying I was not used to that shit. Or the guy would go, all right, sharks. He wants us to be really focused like a shark. So he'd go, sharks.
Ew,
oh, my God. I hate that shit. Right? So
sounds like something a fourth grade teacher would tell you, you know?
Meanwhile, that guy who used to say sharks, sweetest guy in the world, he left the school halfway through season one. Then he went on to a show or to recreate Roseanne. He created the first one. And now he was back doing the second one, which was a huge hit. And then, so anyway, he's probably done working with big, crazy stars like Kevin and Roseanne, right?
Yeah, a little bit of Ambien ruined his career, you know?
I mean, Kevin's awesome. Kevin was the best, but, you know, I'm just saying. So anyway, yeah, that was hard. And then the realization that, you know, it's not, these guys aren't going away. It's not like next year I'm going to be running the show. So it was exciting at first. Then it was really frustrating. And then I realized I can only do this ever again if it's my show or like, you know, someone where, you know, like if Sebastian had a show, a brewer, and they want to brought me in where I know people are going to, I'm like really
needed.
Head guy. Yeah. You know? But it's a fascinating world. And when we were making good stuff, when we were having those moments, like Kevin is the best sitcom actor I've ever seen. That's his bottom line.
Right.
He could come in and not know his lines and then in 10 minutes, like, just rip it. So when we were doing something really funny, a lot of times we didn't. A lot of times I didn't. I thought we were doing hacky stuff. But when we had those moments where we were doing really funny stuff, you forgot about the stand-up. And you were like, this is a hoot, man. This is a lot of fun. But at the end of the day, I was missing the stage big time. So, right. So I wasn't really upset when it didn't come back.
Is that hard to you know, you're funny naturally, you're funny writing in your stand. Is it hard to be like forced to find the funny in someone else's script? Is that a hard thing to do?
Well, I mean, it's not because it is and it isn't. I mean, me and this guy Pete, one day we came up with an idea for a script where Kevin's going to go undercover at a used car. Him and Leah Remini were detectives. They had a detective agency. So we had an idea. He's going to go undercover at a used car dealership and then get so into selling used cars that he doesn't want to come back maybe to security. And we wrote the script. Dude, it was so funny, man. I mean, we had Kevin coming into work with the gold chain, the slick back handle, that jacket. And then when he finally decides to just be a detective again, you know, because you got to obviously end it the right way. As he's taking the gold chain off, he's looking in the mirror going, oh, now I know how Donnie Brasco felt. You know? And we had an ongoing thing at the car dealership where there was a really ugly guy that you never see, but he'd always walk past and Kevin would be like, oh, Jesus, Tommy, put a cowbell on or something. Give us a one. it was the funniest thing I ever wrote, because I said me and this guy Pete wrote it, and he's the best writer. And then, you know, you hear all the writers when it got handed out, you hear them in their offices laughing, and you rarely hear that. They're fucking laughing. It was so funny. And then, you know, some of the other guys that are close to Kevin would come up and be like, we can't do this because of this, and we can't do that because of that. And, you know, and then it's like, it's not that they're right and I'm right. It's just a difference of opinion. And then they do something different and they make it half as funny, in my opinion. So that's all. You know, when you think you can write anything you want, but when they don't use it, you're like, damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
So anyway, that guy, he wrote a script. His name is Pete Hoy. He wrote a movie script of many of them, but he wrote this movie script that halfway through the season one of Kevin Can Wait, turns out they're going to film it starring Billy Crystal.
Wow.
So he's going to finish out season one at the time. Season two. He was going to finish out season two. And then Kevin and the other guys would go in the other room for long periods of time, Kevin and like the showrunner. So we started writing our script and then that thing became the funniest thing I ever fucking wrote. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Nice. Awesome.
Sorry I'm not being funny, guys. Shit.
Nah, I this is the stuff I love to hear, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it kind of dictates what I keep hearing about how there's a lot of writers who just try to get off of shows just to do their own shows. Just all the backstories on it is really interesting.
Yeah, like, you know, it was funny. One time I was doing this interview show in my Jeep, I did this show and I'd interview comics. It was basically what Seinfeld's doing now, but I did it before him. And I went out to Nick DiPaolo's
nice
house, one of my favorite comics.
Me
and
too.
He's got a beautiful house up on the Hudson River, real nice stone house, gorgeous. And we're walking around, he's showing me around. And you know, Nick is like, he's not as famous as he should be, in my opinion, obviously. And I don't know how much money he makes. His house is nice. I'm sure he does well. But I'm walking by, and he's got like an Emmy from writing on the Chris Rock show and some other writing thing. And I go, DiPaolo, I mean, why don't you just go write more, man? His money's so good, and obviously you can get other writing gigs. And he looks at me. I'll never forget. This is before I wrote for Kevin Can Wait or anything. This is like years ago. And he turns around and he goes, so what? So I can fucking write jokes so somebody else can be fucking famous? I'm tired of that kid. And I just thought it was very selfish. I'm like, what's wrong with this guy? And then, you know, then I'm on a show and you're like, this is exciting. And after the third week, you're like, all right, fuck this. I want to tell the joke. It's like, in between takes, I'd come up with a better joke than what they had. And I'd whisper it to Kevin and he'd go, okay. And then halfway through the scene, he'd do my joke. I don't even know how he remembers it. And it'd be a live studio audience, and it would get this huge laugh, and everyone would look over, PD, way to go, and you know, and you feel good. You're like, damn, man, I'm ripping it. And then after like 3 weeks as a comic, you're like, I don't care. This just is not the same as me saying it, man. I want to say it. That's just the nature of the beast. But I might have felt different if we were writing like some unbelievable sitcom that's never been done before. Like, I'll give you an example. We had an episode where we wrote this episode, it aired. But basically, Kevin's got to go help out his buddy whose wife ran away because Kevin said something that pissed her off, so she ran off. So he feels obligated to help his buddy around the house till she comes back. And he becomes like a nanny for the five kids, right?
Right.
Taking them here, funny, funny stuff, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the entire episode, all the kids are hugging Kevin. It's Christmas time. It's Christmas Eve, I think. And the mother comes in. And as soon as the mother comes in, they all leave Kevin and run to the mother and blow him off, right? So he starts to – he's like, oh, okay, well, there goes that. And he backpedals out of the house, and now he's standing in front of the big bay window looking in at the wife and the husband and the kids all together again, right? sort of like my work is done here. So I said – that was the script, and that's how we filmed it. And I said, man, you know what would be so funny? As Kevin is looking through the window at family all together again, let's give him an umbrella, and he pops open the umbrella and he fucking floats away like Mary Poppins. Come on, right? I put half of the writing room was like, dude, that's the funniest shit I ever heard. We gotta do that. And then the old guys, the other half, are like, that doesn't make any sense. He wouldn't float away in a fucking umbrella. No shit, guy. No shit. It's a joke about Mary Pop. He wouldn't fucking babysit the guy's kids either. So, you know, it was so. And then a buddy of mine who writes for the show, he watches some movie. What the hell? Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
And he says they do some scene where the guy's floating down with an umbrella, and the other kid goes, you look like Mary Poppins. And the guy goes, who's that? Oh, she's a da-da-da, some movie, from a movie. And he goes, yeah, well, look at me. I'm Mary fucking Poppins. And you know that? I don't know that. But the whole movie theater, my buddy said, died laughing. And he's sitting in his seat going, God damn it, we should have done that. We would have had it. So when they don't do those kind of things and you're like, God, it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating.
I'm sure, man.
What a job.
Mike, go ahead.
So, Pete, since we're talking about the show, were you the one that killed off the wife?
No. I tell you, though, I wasn't against it. I'll put it that way. We all have to. I'm not saying that woman, Erin Hayes is her name. She's very nice, and I'm sure I don't see her stuff, but I'm sure she's very talented. She gets a lot of work. I know she's talented because I would see what she was doing. It was talented. But Kevin didn't really seem to have an interest in writing a show like King of Queens where it's about a marriage. He wanted it to be more about him getting into trouble with his guy friends, and then the wife kind of shakes the finger going, like, you know, Wilma from the Flintstones. And that lady didn't want to do that. Erin Hayes had no interest in doing that kind of thing, and she was kind of duped. She didn't think she would be doing that. So she wasn't really happy, and he wasn't really comfortable. So, you know, it kind of made sense, but Kevin didn't want to play a divorced character. He just, like, didn't want to open up that can of worms. So he's like, well, we'll just, what if she dies, you know? So, again, though, this is kind of what another one that frustrated me. So when we came back for season two, we were all pitching that, how are we going to address this? So she's dead. It's a year later, and the people above me decided we're not going to say how she died. We're not even going to get into that. We're not going to say car accident, this, that. We just know she wasn't murdered. You know what I mean? So, and they go, let's just address where we're at in the show really quickly up front in the opening scene and then move on. And the way we ended up doing it, again, wasn't my choice. It was a little like too casual. It was like Kevin's in the kitchen and he's looking for something, and the daughter says, ever since mom died, and he's like, I know, it's been tough for everybody. And that was it. That's basically all we did to address her death. So we're in the writer's room. I'm sorry, we're actually out to dinner before season two started, and we're all riffing ideas in a big room having some drinks. And I go, what I pitched was, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the show, but Jim Brewer plays a priest on the show.
Yep.
He guest appear, and he's mm-hmm. supposed to be Kevin's kind of priest, but also Kevin's guy to go to for, advice. So anyway, I said the opening scene for season two, now that she's dead, should be Brewer and Kevin in a car in a cemetery. And Brewer's like, "Are you ready?" And Kevin's like, "Yeah, I got this, Father. It's been over a year. We have to move on." And I go, "And Kev's got a beard, but it's a messy beard because it's obvious, we're at a cemetery." And he says, "Donna's been dead. I haven't been here since the funeral. I got to go up and pay my respects. I got to get my life back together." So Brewer goes to get out of the car with him, and Kevin goes, "I got this, Father. I got to do this alone." So Kevin gets out, and we follow Kevin. He goes up to Donna's tombstone. He's standing in front of it, and he goes, "Hello, Donna. How are you?" And then Brewer yells from the car, "Kev, Kev." And Kevin turns around and goes, "Father Philip, please, just give me a moment, all right? Not now, not now." Brewer goes, "All right, all right, all right." So Kevin turns around and says more stuff. He's like, "It's been a year. We've moved on. We really miss you, but we're getting it together." He just says everything the audience needs to know. And then he goes, "So I love you and miss you." And then when he turns to leave, Brewer goes, "Kev." And he goes, "What?" And Brewer points to the tombstone next to that one. Kevin wasn't even talking to his wife. So he goes, "Oh, shit." So he steps. I go, "Sit in, Kev." I'm telling Kev, I go, "You step over to the other tombstone. Stop to say all that shit again." And then you stop and you look back and you go, "Well, you heard it. I was just right there. So you heard it." And then you go, "Let's go." And you hop in the car and we're out. And again, half the guy's like, "Let's do that." And then the other. Like, "It's too mean. It's too mean." Too mean what? What the fuck are you even talking about?
To kill a fictional character? Hurt a fictional character's feelings?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it, guys. It's like they would go, "Oh, this is so mean what we're doing to Eric." I go, "What are we doing? We didn't do nothing. It's a fake fucking death."
Ah. Well, let me ask you something on that note. Like, you know, you've been comedy so long, you're privileged enough to, see the boom of comedy, and then maybe like the doldrums, and then all of a sudden there's this big boom again with the internet and whatnot. But do you see all the problems that a lot of comics have in colleges and with the PC police? Now, you're not really a dirty comic, but do you see a problem with that, or do you experience that on your shows at all? Like, where you're allowed to go? Like, obviously you experienced it writing, but do you see it in
It's interesting, It's like, by the way, I know that first comedy boom, that was before my time. I started doing it like 95.
Okay.
And it was interesting because it was like, not a lot of people in the clubs. And when I broke into the Comedy Cellar, the waitresses had to sit in the audience sometimes. Because there was no crowd. So you perform for the waitress, but they wanted, if someone walked in, they wanted them to think there was a show. So,
Wow.
But,
okay.
As far as the PC thing goes, you're right. It really doesn't affect me because I really don't, get. I mean, it's annoying if I say I like Trump because people like fucking flip out. But
of course.
But for the most part, it doesn't really affect me. But I do think it's hugely important that comics got to be able to say what they feel. But on the flip side, a lot of these comics today, man, they like, they're saying shit that's not even funny. It's mm-hmm. just trying to be shocking. And you can't just say anything you want and not expect people to have a reaction, So mm-hmm. like, if you're going to say something really, really rude, people are going to say in their own way, you're an asshole. And if that, but I mean, that's all I'm saying. It's like, comics go always want to have carte blanche to say whatever they want with no repercussions. And I still feel you can say anything you want, but man, there's always repercussions, and it depends. Like, you take a guy like Doug Stanhope, man. Doug Stanhope is a fucking groundbreaking comic in so many ways for that. Fuck you. I'm doing it my way. I don't care. And then other comics want to be like him, but they just want to be like him because it's cool. You got to be built like him. And if you're not built like him, you're never going to be able to last.
People
like,
see right through it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I was playing in this festival in Ireland called the Kilkenny Festival in a small town called Kilkenny, Ireland. It's like this really great international comedy festival I was invited to do where all these comics from all over the world congregate in this small Irish town, and every little pub becomes a place to do stand up, and you have like three shows in a night, and there's no Hollywood people, so there's no pressure or anything. It's just a celebration of comedy. No one's going back to the main hotel. So and so killed this guy. Fun, you know. So my wife and I flew into Dublin, and we landed. The guy's taking us 2 hours to the town. Says Stanhope is landing in 20 minutes. Do you mind if we just wait so I don't have to send another car? I'm like, yeah, no, of course. So Stanhope gets in the car. We'll have a nice conversation, blah, blah, blah. We get there. We drop him off. And then the head guy of the whole festival goes, hey, you drove in with Doug, huh? And I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah. We got him doing a special show each night at midnight at the Ba Ba Ba. We're looking forward to it. He's crazy. You never know what Doug's going to say, right? And I go, yeah, no, I hear you. So, and as the guy's taking me to my hotel room, he goes, listen, just want to let you know, obviously say and do whatever you want on stage, but just give you a heads up. There were three child molestations recently that were very much in the news, and the only thing you should stay away from is anything about that child molestation. It's really, really touchy right now. Right. And I'm like, no problem. It's not going to go after. And he goes, well, we're just making sure we tell everyone. So the next morning, he calls my hotel room, that same guy, and he goes, hey, I want to add you to a couple of shows. Do you mind? I was like, yeah, no. Why? What's up, Mike? Oh, well, we just had a little problem with Stanhope last night. I said some stuff about the town child molestations, and the entire crowd left.
Oh, my God.
Out on him. So we think, what do you think we're going to send Doug home, right? And I go, well, isn't that what you wanted? That's what you wanted. That's him. And then they did change their mind, and they just had him do some shows a little further on the outskirts of town.
That's hilarious.
Holy shit. But that's it, you know? It's like there's only one Doug. And I don't know why I'm talking about the guy, but I just admire his, you know, stick to what I do. Another manager I know, you know, was taking me and we were pitching a sitcom, and she's like, you're very good at this. And I said, well, I know how to do it and charm these people and stuff. And I go, well, what do you do? Like, have you ever had anyone that, like, you know, it didn't go well? And she goes, well, can't say it didn't go well, but like one time I was pitching a show with Stanhope, and when we went in to meet the executives, Doug Stanhope walked in and said to all of them, what do you want the monkey boy to do? The monkey boy's here. What do you want me to do? You know, and we were all offended by that. But I'm like, what wouldn't you, if you're hiring Doug, you know what Doug does. So don't you want Doug to come in and do what he does? It's like, that's what he does.
That kind of reminds me of all the stories you hear about Patrice O'Neill, like the same, you know, you hear all these stories about him, and like, he was one of my favorites, you know, and still is, obviously, but you hear these stories how he just couldn't seem to bear it down to be, you know, like to get that next thing, because he just always had to like have these outbursts and say what was on his mind or start ripping apart the staff that was there. And so it reminded me of that for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He had that kind of streak in him too. I remember one time early on, Patrice had a really bad manager. We all knew the guy was a bad manager, and he goes, I keep him on purpose because if I can make it famous with that motherfucker, then I know it's just about me, you know? Yeah, the guy was just making things seemingly harder on himself, but he was really kind of a pioneer, you know?
He's stuff, man. He just listen. I will still go to bed every once in a while and put on an episode of like Tough Crowd and just listen to him, you know, just listen to him. Like, he's just a magnet for... You just wanted to hear that guy talk more. I love that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny guy.
But Pete, before you go, I did ask a buddy of mine. He's kind of like me. He looks like he's a big, big Irishy ginger looking guy. And he listens to your show too. And he said, he wanted me to ask you, why do you ignore your Irish side over your Italian side so much? Is it Sebastian that's rubbing off on you so much? Like, the Irish are pretty cool too, man.
Oh, that's so funny, man. No, listen, my brother,
here we go.
My brother's younger brother is total Mick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My mom's last name is Courtney, and my mom had six brothers and sisters. It was seven of them. And my mom's grandfather was the fire chief on Long Island.
Oh,
and they
yeah.
all drank. Every Christmas day, there'd be like 90,000 cases of Budweiser out on the porch. They were the funniest people, you know, and I love the Irish side. But like whenever I'd like growing up and I asked my mom, like, do you ever have any desire to go to Ireland or you know, where from Ireland is the family from? She'd be like, I don't know. Like, she couldn't care less.
Right.
Whereas my dad would always be like, we come from Naples and this and that, you know, and get me into it. And then, I mean, come on, man. As I got, by the time I saw Goodfellas, and the wife goes, when they were getting married, and she's at the wedding, and she's doing the voiceover, and she goes, everybody was either Peter or Paul. Paul or Peter. I'm like, that's it. I'm just fucking Italian. Seriously, though, every St. Patrick's Day growing up since I was 5 years old, my father would walk in and we'd all laugh. He'd come in from, you know, the kitchen and be like, oh boy, here we go. Is your mother in green yet? You know? And then as we got older, my brother and mother would celebrate it. You know, I mean, same mom and dad, same brother and sister, not no step this or that, all one unit. But me and my sister and dad were like, we're Italian. I go, whatever, you know. And then my mom would give me a pin every St. Patrick's Day to wear to school.
Yeah.
So it was cool. But I have nothing against the Irish at all. I just kind of, I mean, I look Italian. If I look more Irish, I'd probably be more into that.
I always talk about like people doing those, you know, the DNA tests, you know, like all they care about is that they're looking for the big countries. No one really wants to get the results that they're from Lithuania, you know, and stuff. Liechtenstein, like they're just like, yes, Irish, yes, German. You know what I mean? Like they're just looking for the big boys.
I know, but if you are from a tiny country, you know, small enough, you can actually land the plane and go, is Bill here? He's my uncle. It's Bill.
Well, it's funny you said because I'm
the
Irish.
The biggest comedian in Andorra.
Yeah. Like, technically, I'm Irish, Scottish, German, and Lithuanian. I don't. I'm not like, guys, Lithuanian pride. Come on. Like, I just ignore that. I'm just like, I'm Irish. You know, that's it.
Yeah, like, that's it. That's where my daughter's at now, right? Because my wife's Polish, and I'm half Irish, half Italian. So now, technically, if she's older and she's dating a guy, and he's like, what are you? Well, I'm Irish, I'm Italian. I go, listen, you're fucking old, you're Italian. That's all you are. Hit him with Italian. Right? You know?
Pete, I want to thank you so much for giving me some time. You're a big influence on me in comedy and not only, just the podcast world, man. I still listen weekly.
Yeah, it looks like we got to wrap up. What are they doing, closing the Autobahn back there?
Yeah, that's something, obviously. I don't know what's going on in Mike's house. There's probably like a hot rod being taken apart in the kitchen or something like that. But
yeah, something like that.
But Pete, I want to thank you so much for coming on, man. I know you got a I know you got a CD that just came out, or a CD or an album, I guess we should call it now. So what do you got on the horizon, and where should people go check you out and say hello?
Well, you just go to PeteCorielli.com. All the dates are listed. You can get the free podcast there. Hitting the road hard. I guess the big one to plug, considering where you guys cast, is July 13th. I'll be playing the Music Box Theater headlining at the Borgata Casino.
Yeah,
July 13th.
I saw you just put that up the other night. I think I'm going to try to come down to that.
Oh, all right. Let me know if you can make it, man. We'll have a beer.
100%, man.
all right.
Pete.
All right. Thanks for having me on, boys. Sorry I wasn't funny. I turned it into a goddamn Inside the Actors studio. I apologize.
You're always hilarious, man. You're always hilarious, and that's the kind of stuff I want to hear. I want to hear about, you know, sometimes we don't get to hear the biographical part. We get the funny from you weekly on Fridays.
Yes, we don't talk about this kind of stuff too much, man. We always keep it about light and stuff. I mean, you know, everyday shit.
Right. All right, yeah. Pete, thanks so much, man.
All right, thanks, guys. Take it easy. Good luck with the show.
Thanks, pal. I think the one and only Pete Corielli, Mike.
Yeah. Great interview. Great interview.
He's the best, man. You know what's weird? It's like, and like, I, you know, when you listen to a show like, you know, weekly, and you kind of get to know these guys, like, you know how like our audience always is asking us questions about our life. Like, oh, Mike, when do you close in the house? And they're like, Scott, like, you know, like, how's the Poison Ivy doing? You know, my inbox is always full.
No. Exactly,
but when you get to know like guys like on a like a weekly level. You know how like when you used to watch TV and the same show all the time, you feel like they're your friends?
Mm-hmm.
Like I hear his weekly stories and like for the last 4 years, whatever. So it felt like very cool. It felt like we were in their podcast somehow, which is it's kind of strange. But he's just a funny dude, man. One of my favorite comics, the one and only Pete Corielli.
Yeah, I'm glad we're in their podcast. We'll get some ratings now.
Oh yes, yes, yes. I guess I have a quick story before we get to our guest.
Please say it.
All right, so you just talked about, you said, oh, you were crapping your pants. Well, this guy.
I wonder where this is going. Yep.
Well, this guy crapped his pants at work the other day.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there, that's not even, like, the bad part of the story.
Okay. Do tell.
All right, so I'm at work, okay? I know some of you are like, what, you guys don't make enough money on this podcast? This is all you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, I need the jacuzzi money.
Listen,
you know,
I just like to stay busy, you know? Like, I don't like to sit around all the time and count my money. But so I'm at work, and I'm working, and I'm in a situation where I can't leave what I'm doing, okay? And I get hit with the wave of, oh, God, like, once, and I try to walk it off. Now, when you get hit with that first poo wave, you try to like take it and absorb it and kind of like shake it off a little bit and kind of be like, ah, all right, it's just a wave, you know, I'll go later. Okay, so I do shake it off, and there's about 2 minutes left of what I have to do, and I get hit with the wave of the century, like, oh my God, you have a minute to go find a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, are you cramping up or cramping, anything like that?
Cramping, like can't walk in full steps, like can't extend my legs into full steps because it would just open up the floodgates, literally.
Yeah.
So I start walking down as fast as I can, and one bathroom's locked. Now, we only have three bathrooms in the whole place I work, and they're all unisex bathrooms. So, it's just they're just one room with a toilet in them.
Okay.
I get to one that's occupied, and I'm sitting there sweating. Okay, sweating, and I'm like, this has got to happen.
Were you tempted to do the whole knock? How much longer do you have?
Yeah.
What are you up to?
But almost not, because I was so in pain, like I couldn't like do anything else but think about how bad I had to go to the bathroom.
Gotcha.
So I go, and the person actually did come out of the door right away, and I'm like, just go watch. I got to get in. You just take care of this. I walk in, and as soon as I am in the bathroom, I'm pulling down my – and I didn't even get to pull my pants down. Sure enough, it just starts coming out, okay?
Boom.
Now, not in a full, like – surge, okay? So it came out a little bit, and I'm like wiggling my way down in pain, and then I like, you know, poo a little bit more, and then I get on the toilet, and it just comes like awful,
like shaking like Mexico after they score a goal against Germany.
Right, exactly, like a minor earthquake. Like one where, like, it's bad enough, like, where it's just a single stall. Like, one, like, if you were by the door, you would be able to hear what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is terrible. No one wants to hear anything. Okay, so I realize I got a situation. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the bathroom, feel 1,000 times better. Okay. I flush the toilet. I go to wipe. I go to wipe, flush the toilet, and then I realize I still got to go a little bit, which is not uncommon. Whatever. Okay, I'm not done.
Yeah.
I go again, and this time I wipe and I flush the toilet paper down, and sure enough, toilet paper doesn't go down.
Oh.
So now I'm sitting there. There's there's a little bit of poo in my underwear at the time. Okay, that were down on my ankles. Okay, so
is
now
it like a solid what we got here, or just a like a stain,
like a in between those two things, like
got
in between like a full out poo and a stain. So there's more than welcome. A stain might be welcome for an hour. This was not welcome. This was enough where I'd have to like pat it down a little bit. Okay,
gotcha.
So I flush the toilet. Nothing's going down. I'm like, oh boy. Okay. And now the toilet, like I can't see any poo in the toilet. It went down, but it's all just toilet paper hovering on top. And I'm like, oh boy.
Gotcha.
So toilet paper probably clogged it up. Now there is no resources at the time. Okay. All that's there. Now, Mike, I'm showing you this. Was an antiseptic bottle about this size, right? Like about, you know, like a pint maybe. Like kind of tall, like a tall can. Like one of those little antiseptic sprays. So there's all this toilet paper, and there's just one garbage can. Now, I decide to take that antiseptic bottle and start to flop.
Scoop.
Exactly. Scoop. Scoop is the word. Scoop some of the toilet paper into the said can and see if I could break up this clog.
Rectify the situation without a plunger.
Yes.
Okay.
No plunger, no nothing.
All right.
Now, the other
You're
thing
really that, thinking outside the throne there.
You know what it was? It was like an escape room. Like I had to figure out a resource. Like I needed something. And I'm panicking. Now, dude, at this point, I'm sweating now. Like I sweat. It's hot, but I sweat instantly. I go up and I do stand up. I sweat instantly. I go outside. I sweat instantly. It doesn't matter. I am pouring sweat. Okay. Now this happens to be a very There's a lot of things going on in this hallway of where I work at this time. So it's not like I'm in this secluded bathroom. I could hear everyone outside the door. And I'm going through escape room strategies like whatnot. So I scoop a bunch of toilet paper out into the garbage can. And I throw the antiseptic thing into there and cover it. So no one, you know, they throw away it, whatever. And I go, okay. And there was only a couple pieces of toilet paper floating at the top. That's it. And I'm like, I got it. I'm like, all right, let's flush it. I go to flush it. The toilet just starts rising all the way over. I'm like, no, please, God, no, please, God, no. And then just complete spillover.
Water
everywhere, like where it's on my shoes. No poo, somehow. Like there's not a lot, but just water everywhere. And I'm in full panic mode, beat red. I run and I get a maintenance guy. I'm like, oh my God, the toilet, blah, blah, blah. And I run and I slap an out of order sign that I write and scribble out of order on. I get back to work and someone says to me, you know, what, are you okay? Like, you look, I'm like, I got to be honest with you. I just clogged the toilet and I didn't tell her that I pooed my pants. Okay. Now the other thing I did with that,
not something you tell your coworkers a lot.
The other thing I did with that, I took my boxers off and like crumbled them up. And my strategy was to take the toilet paper and jam them into the poop part, like where I had pooed a little bit to kind of pad anything from escaping. And I put it in my pocket, went back to where I work, and stuffed it in my computer bag silently, so that I brought home a nice messy pair of underwear, and then
please tell me there were the wee boxers that we talked about in a previous episode.
No, these are my good boxers too. The MeUndies, the boxers that I really like. But it was absolutely terrible. I was so embarrassed, so beat red and sweating. It was a traumatic. It was like everything that could go wrong in that little room went wrong.
Now, did you bring the stained underwear in the bag back home, or did you chuck them out on the highway?
No. Now, I've listened to many a podcast, right, and I've heard some advertisements for this underwear called MeUndies, MeUndies, and they always saying they're the most comfortable underwear, and the host saying, like, I, you know, inquisitive minds, I bought a 3-pack. Now, they're not cheap. They're not cheap. They're about
okay.
$15 to $20 a pair. Expensive.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. But I ordered a 3-pack. Game changer. Game changer. No bundle up. Don't, you know, they don't get, like, moisture weird. They don't start to fade at all. Super soft. So I really liked them. And I eventually ordered a 10-pack. And then I also got a couple for Christmas from the fiance. But so I'm trying to phase out my old underwear. So these were one of my good underwears. And I was like, I'm not.
I like how you're doing it in shifts. It's like, no, we can't just jump into this project. We have to. Phase four is when we get rid of the old boxers.
Yeah. Well, listen, okay? I'm also.
We only got two.
I'm also poor. So, like, I can't afford such big purchases to replace all my underwear. I got to phase it out. Like, you know, like, there's rips in one. There's, like, old school. Just throw one out at a time and kind of keep it going. But horrific.
I mean, it's very shocking to our listening audience that Scott is not underwear rich. But
all right. I was recently put in touch with a band by the name of Happy, a pop punk band out of South Carolina. A fun band. I just was able to check them out. So I was asked to do an interview with them. So I want to give them a call and learn all about the band Happy. So let's give, I believe we are giving Sean a call here. So let's give it a go. Hey, is this Sean?
Is there a sense?
Sean, it's Scott from Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I am doing great. Where are we calling you from? You guys? Are you guys in South Carolina?
Yep. Right now we're in Beaufort, South Carolina. So, hey, what's up?
Is that who we got there? We got Sean, obviously. Who else is there?
Caleb, I'm the drummer.
Caleb, the drummer. Sean, the bassist. Yep. And is it just the two of you guys right now?
Yes, sir. It's just us, yeah.
Perfect. All right, so I was put in touch with you guys by Jen, and she told me to check you guys out, and it brought me back. Your music brought me back. It reminded me a lot of, like, very fun times when I was in high school where it seemed like pop punk and rock, like, kind of pop rock was, like, really exploding. Were you guys, how old is the majority of the band?
I'm the youngest. I just turned 19.
Wow.
Yeah, we're all in, like, our early 20s. Like, yeah, 22, Jack and I are 23, so we're kind of in that group.
So you're babies, is what you're saying. So
you could say that.
All right, so tell me, like, where you got your sound from. Now, I know, like, okay, so, like, for me, I'm a little older than you guys. I'm 34. And in high school, it was punk was a good way to really, like, I mean, let's face it, it was a good way to be able to learn how to play quickly. You know, it wasn't overly complicated. You were able to write songs quickly. And, you know, it was just like it really matched, you know, that age, that time frame. What are your guys' main influences, and how did you really kind of come upon that style?
Well, I started off with my mom. She grew up in the 90s, so she was really into, like, early Green Day and, like, early Blink-182 and just, like, older bands like that. So growing up, I just listened to a lot of, like, just the whole huge, like, pop-punk scene, like Blink-182 and All Time Low and Green Day.
Yeah.
And that really started me off. And then I started maturing my tastes into, like, different genres. So, yeah, I definitely started off with a pop punk vibe, and then, like, I've grown back to it. It's pretty cool how it worked out.
Yeah, and I started listening to pop punk pretty early too. Like, the first CD I ever owned was A Hangover You Don't Deserve by Bowling for Soup.
Yeah.
And at the time I didn't even know, like, what pop punk was or anything, but I think it kind of built off of that. Like, I started listening to Green Day, Good Charlotte as I got older, and then the people I started hanging out with listened to punk and stuff, like, you know. One of the first bands I really got into, like, alternative bands or indie, was La Dispute.
Right.
And that kind of seeded out, like, into, like, the Menzingers, the Flatliners, stuff like that. But I think we all definitely have our own influences, and it comes together really well. But I don't think we have, like, a specific sound cater to.
Yeah, we've interviewed so many bands and played in bands for years. That's usually the question that I feel like people almost don't like the most is like, what, well, you know, what genre are you? Because, you know, like one it might be a genre for, you know, a year or two, but things start to kind of, you know, change, or you write something, you know, completely different, and you don't really want to be pigeonholed into one thing. But you guys, it says you guys formed in 2016, so that's not super long. How did you guys get together?
Well, Sean and I actually weren't in the band at the time. It was a couple of other guys, but it was Tate. I think he started. He was looking for a couple of people, and he hit some people up on Facebook. And a guy named Rich was on drums originally, and then Jack, who I think he wrote all of the original like riffs and stuff for the first EP, and then Rich ended up moving to Nashville for schooling or whatever, and then one of my friends contacted me and said, "Oh, these guys need a drummer," and then it kind of went from there. And then another one of the guys left the band, and that's where we found Sean. I think Sean's been with us about like a year now, something like that.
Yeah, I was actually in another local band, and we used to play a bunch of shows together. And like we've been like I've been friends with Happy for over a year now, so yeah, it was just like it's just perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Sean was the perfect like person to bring in.
So what is the scene like in South Carolina? You have is there a big live music? Because I'm in Jersey, and there's a pretty, you know, if you want to catch live music, you can pretty much go out any day of the week or just hop over to the city. What's the scene like in South Carolina for, you know, punk bands, up and coming bands? Is there a lot of places to play out, or?
Yeah, there's a good bit of music venues. Recently, a few have been closing down, but there's this one venue called New Brooklyn Tavern, and that's pretty much like the place to go to in Columbia. It's all kinds of genres and punk bands and hardcore bands. And then we have websites around here, such as SceneSC, and they'll like promote a lot of local bands. So there's definitely like, if you're looking to get in the band of Columbia, you have like the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
Now, when you guys went and did you, when you made like your EPs and whatnot, did you guys self fund them, or were you able to get any funding, or did you record it yourself? What was your recording process?
The EP was recorded at a local studio here. I think it was like self funded, but that neither of us were in the band at the time, but
yeah.
So
what are you guys working on now? You guys recording? Are you going out on tour? What's going on with the band?
Yeah, so right now we're in Buford right now. We're filming a music video for our upcoming single. For the next few days, we're out here recording. It'll be a lot of fun. So yeah, definitely keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, and we have some new music coming at some point. New songs, some good stuff.
A few weeks, yeah.
So are you guys at the point as a band where you guys are able to tour together, or are you still kind of local to South Carolina?
Right now, we're planning on going or touring, and probably sometime soon, probably in the fall. But you know, whenever that new music comes out,
right. We're definitely shooting for like August. Yeah. That's probably what we're shooting for right now. Yeah. Is touring. Yeah,
cool. I like to add, like, I've interviewed a lot of bands on here, and you know, some older bands that were very successful. I always like to talk to musicians and artists about the way music is accessed today, whether it's streaming services and Spotify and you name it. Now, for a band like you guys, I'm sure it's a fantastic thing to have, because I guess it puts you directly in, you know, people can pull up your music, they like one song, they can go check them all out immediately. How do you guys feel as far as social media and streaming, how it allows you guys to communicate with people and also get your music out there? Do you see it as a complete plus, or do you guys find it hard? You're starting to realize that it's very hard to make money other than touring and playing live music.
Right. Well, I think the social media thing has really helped us out. Spotify recently, we've been added to a playlist called Pop Punk's Not Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we're almost at 200,000 streams. So
yeah, I was going to say, I checked out a couple songs. Was that Fish Tank, was that called?
Yeah, we recently released a song called Fish Tank, yeah, okay. a few weeks ago.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, for a young band, it's got to be great to, you know, I remember when we started a band in high school, we went and bought a 4-track, and like made tapes and eventually burned things to CDs ourselves and like would hand them out to people. A whole lot easier just placing it on the internet and saying, hey, check this out, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot easier. Definitely, it's cool because, for example, like Spotify, you can, there's this option for related artists. So you can go through like all these bands that sound similar and like all the bands are on the same playlist. So it's really cool to like can reach out to people. We played with a band a few months ago or a few days ago that came through Columbia and they're one of our related artists. And it was cool just to like hang out with them and,
So what is your guys' writing process? Like, are you a jam it out in the studio? Are you one guy comes with an idea and then you guys put it together? Do you all figure it out? What is your general writing process?
Yeah, it's pretty much, you know, Tate, he's usually the one that writes the songs and he'll come to us with an idea and then we'll pretty much all just add in our different parts to it, you know, and it just comes together as something, and usually it's pretty good, but
so I was a bassist too, and so you guys make up the rhythm section, which is, you know, completely the most ignored part of all groups. Do you find I think it's been that way since the beginning of time. You know, it goes front man, guitar player, then sometimes a drummer, but Sean, I'm sorry. Usually,
you're right. Yeah, I usually totally agree.
Like I was in bands for years, and I still had to explain to people what a bass actually really was to some people. Like some people did not get the concept. They're like, oh, so you play guitar? Well, yeah, I play guitar, but it's a little different, you know? So Sean, I guess, but we have like a weird community though, bass players.
Yeah. It's
we have like a weird bond.
Yeah. Especially the drummers. Like Caleb's my boy. Like, you know, it's cool. We're the rhythm section. I think,
yeah,
I don't know. Other day we were practicing and like, I had issues with my bass amp or something, and like I had to sit out for one song. And then Tate looks at me, he's like, "Wow, bass does make a big difference."
Like, the room feels so empty without the bass. It's like, what's wrong?
yeah, it's like one of those things you don't know what you have until it's missing.
You're like,
wow, no, that's the reason we were like sounding beefy and like bold. But
yeah, right.
One day, Sean, we'll get our.
It'll come, dude.
It'll come. We'll just form a bass band of all basses. But
I'm down for that. Hit me up, honestly.
so what's on the line for the band? What kind of things you guys got going on? Are you working on an album? Are you you said you were planning on doing some touring once the new music, and like where can people go and check your music out?
Spotify is definitely like the perfect place. Apple Music, Spotify. I think it's on Bandcamp. We've got music videos on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube's big.
Spotify is probably definitely the place.
And it's important for people to know that it's happy with a period.
Right. Yes. It's just puts a little uniqueness on it. We usually say because Pharrell has a very popular song called Happy, and if you look up Happy anywhere, you're gonna find him. So yeah, we had
It's just such a broad spectrum. Yeah. People happy, you know.
Wait, I'm not talking to the guys that wrote that song. I thought that's who this was. No, yeah, it's funny because like my co-host, who he's not here right now. He got hung up in traffic. He was like, he's like, I gotta find the band and get some info on. But he's like, I keep typing in happy music, happy band, and like million different things pop up, like a lot of show tunes and things. But so anybody listening out there, it's happy period.
Period, right? Yeah. The best way to find us anywhere is our at name is Band Called Happy.
Called Happy.
Yeah. So we're not just like we're not happy with a period. Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks for giving a few minutes. I wish you guys the best of luck. It sounds like you are definitely on to some things and kind of getting together and getting ready to kind of, you know, get out there and tour and show people your music. So glad to have you guys on, and good luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
All right, take care, guys. Well, I guess it's that time to get out of here, right?
I guess that wouldn't be a half bad idea or something or other.
Unless you got anything else. I got nothing.
Nothing pending right now. I'm just trying to bring up what I plan to promote tonight. So if you want to...
Stretch?
Stretching, yeah.
You're giving me the stretch sign? But anyway, guys.
You got another 5 minutes.
Oh, so. Good. Anyway, guys, I am having the time of my life here on my podcast here with Mike and the verbal shit. No, but anyway, if you like what you heard tonight, go subscribe to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Follow us on Instagram. And honestly, if you hear this and you email me, I'll send you a goddamn shirt. Just send me your size at this point.
Yeah.
I'll just send you a shirt just to know that you're out there and listening. So, Berlew, anything to promote?
From our guest last week, Hunt a Killer, they wanted to promote that they have now have a partnership with Cold Case Foundation and Pledgling announced their groundbreaking partnership. For every box purchase, Hunt a Killer helps provide Cold Case Foundation, a charitable organization that provides assistance to law enforcement agencies in their efforts to successfully close cold cases and prevent future events, particularly those involved homicide, missing persons, unidentified bodies, and rapes with serial characteristics. With the necessary means required to facilitate expert consultation, forensic assistance, officer training, funding, and victim support. So if you would like to help out, you can either look up Cold Case Foundation or get the wonderful game Hunt a Killer online right now. I'm going to be playing it more when I get into my new house. It's really interesting with all the pieces of it, the clues that you have to decipher. This is not a game that you're going to throw away in 5 minutes. And all, if you're really into investigating stuff and solving cases, this is an amazing game, Hunt a Killer.
Absolutely. And go listen to last week's episode. But I'm going to promote the Dave Andrechuk Foundation. Dave Andrechuk, former guest, Hall of Famer, NHL Hall of Famer, former New Jersey Devil. They have a Dave Andrechuk Foundation charity golf tournament coming up on July 19th, and they need you. Sponsor packages start at just $250. For more info, call 905-730-9380. Go back and listen to the episode with Dave Andrechuk. Awesome guy. And again, just a Hall of Famer that might have played on your hockey team. So love the guy. He was great. So I guess with that, I want to say, guys, listen to the podcast. Go back and listen to some of the episodes we got, or subscribe, or comment, or follow us on Twitter and Instagram at VS Comedy or Verbal Shenanigans. We just had a great time. I want to thank Pete Corielli. I want to thank the band Happy. And I want to thank you, Mike Berlew, for all the great times that we have every week on the show.
Well, thank you, Scotty. And I appreciate the opportunity every week. And next week I'll be in my new humble abode, ready to comfortably sit on my couch and continue this tradition that we do every week.
Absolutely. So, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Adios. Bye-bye.
See ya.